This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. A day after dissolving the unity government, Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas has appointed a new prime minister. Former finance minister Salam Fayyad is an independent. He is in charge of forming a new emergency government. Now completely in control of the Gaza Strip, Hamas today announced it will give amnesty to rival Fatah leadership. An emergency meeting of the Arab League has been scheduled for today to deal with the crisis. Hamas has called on fellow Islamic militant group to release the BBC reporter held captive for 14 weeks. 45-year-old Alan Johnson was the only Western journalist stationed in Gaza. In London, seven British citizens were sentenced today to a total of 136 years in prison on terrorism charges. The men were found guilty of plotting to bomb British and U.S. financial institutions, including the New York Stock Exchange. On Capitol Hill, Senate leaders from both parties say they'll attempt again to breathe life into the moribund immigration bill. Negotiations on the controversial legislation could begin as early as next week. A vote is expected before July 4th. The U.S. Army will hire 25% more mental health professionals to help soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. More than a third of returning troops seek counseling for post-traumatic stress and other problems. The Bush administration is backing away from a promise to veto a spending bill that increases health care for veterans. In New Jersey, the six men accused of plotting to injure troops at Fort Dix have pleaded not guilty. The federal judge in the case promised a speedy trial, perhaps by early October. In California, 10 men have been indicted and 11th arrested for plotting to violently overthrow the communist rulers of Laos. Those indicted are Hmong, an ethnic tribal group long suppressed by communist regimes in Southeast Asia. Officials say further indictments in the case may be issued to some in the California Highway Patrol, an unidentified congressman, and a former Wisconsin state senator. In southwestern Pakistan, 9 people have been killed, 4 wounded in an ambush this morning near a railway station. The government blames tribal rebels. Tehran has begun expelling some of the 1.5 million Afghani immigrants that have crossed the border into Iran in recent months. As many as 100,000 refugees have been deported. The Afghans are placing an enormous strain on both Iranian and Afghani economies.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking. I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all of the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but of course the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week. Yes.
Taking money out.
Money out and putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The FBI is interviewing more than 1 million PC owners whose computers have been hijacked by cyber thieves. Home computers are routinely used by criminals as platforms from which to launch identity thefts and attack websites. Another federal lawsuit has been filed against food giant ConAgra based on a child's illness from its salmonella-tainted peanut butter. More than 600 people in 47 states fell ill after eating the toxic Peter Pan and Great Value products. Goldman Sachs posted a less-than-expected increase in quarterly profit on net earnings of $2.33 billion. The world's largest investment bank said a decline in fixed income trading cut into soaring investment banking fees and equities income. Government-sponsored Freddie Mac posted a quarterly loss of $211 million, a victim of the housing slump. The nation's second-largest buyer of mortgages is just beginning to emerge from an accounting scandal. Adobe reported a 24% increase in quarterly profit. The producer of Photoshop and other software exceeded Wall Street expectations. Light sweet crude is trading at $67.83 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is up 100 points, the Nasdaq up 22, the S&P 500 up 12, and gold is trading at $657 an ounce. SmartQualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
Well, all right! Welcome aboard, everybody. It's Friday! And you know what that means. It means it's Billy Shear's Music Day. We'll be getting there in a little while. Welcome to Head On Radio Network, everybody. And, It's going to be one of those kind of non-green days, but however, the subject we're going to get into today affects everything, and absolutely everything. The reason why we have war, the reason why we have poverty, the reason people struggle, the reason for strife in this world. And that is the international banks. Now, our most wondrous news ninja, Gene, sent me this amazing, amazing article a few hours ago from a gentleman by the name of Richard C. Cook. Now, Richard C. Cook is the author of Challenger Revealed, an insider account of how the Reagan administration caused the greatest tragedy of the space age. A retired federal analyst, his career included work with the U.S. Civil Service Commission, the Food and Drug Administration, the Carter White House, and NASA, followed by 21 years with the U.S. Treasury Department. He is now a Washington, D.C.-based writer and consultant. His book, We Hold These Truths, The Hope of Monetary Reform, will be published later this year. And you can find more information about him at richardccook.com. Now, this is a really involved subject, and I'll only be able to scratch the surface. And if you can go to my blog, 12thharmonic.net, and read a piece that I've written that I've pulled from a couple of Mr. Cook's writings, not just the piece that I was sent yesterday, entitled "It's Official: the Crash of the U.S. Economy Has Begun." Now, we work in a monetary system that is corrupted in its inception. And we deal in an economic system with assumptions that are not really how it has to be. And I'm being given hell in the chat room because I described Gene as the Wonders News Ninja. Well, all our ninjas are awesome. ELO, Betsy, Susan, you all rock. However, it was Gene that sent me this particular article, which got me writing this afternoon. So that's, you know, why those accolades went out that way. Jeez, you know. Such insecurity from you folks. Jeez! Anyway, in this piece, and you should really go and read the whole thing. There's links on today's show post, and it's an eye opener. And he nails quite a few things that Gail and I have written about at 12th Harmonic a number of times over the last couple of years. And, boy, the way the system is, we constantly hear about sustainable growth. Now, sustainable growth is a fallacy. And the only reason that they're constantly talking about sustainable growth, that it's the only way to maintain things as the ripoff continues, right? And we are ripped off by the Federal Reserve each and every day. Okay? The Federal Reserve is not a government agency. This is one of the things that most people don't understand. It is not a part of the U.S. government. It is a private corporation run by private member banks. And they work for one thing only: the profits of their shareholders. And the fact that this legalized monopoly is given a fiat, which is basically a legal contract to print money. And because we're not on any gold or silver standard anymore, and we have been at other times in history, our money, our currency, is based on absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's just pulled out of thin air. And it's even worse now with the fact that the banks are all computerized. They don't even have to really even print it. It's all just kind of digital bits. And when banks issue loans, they're just issuing it out of nothingness. But yet we have to pay those loans back with interest. And do you realize that we have to get loans from this private bank to get the money to pay for the workings of government? Now, currency is supposed to be, representational of the labor of the people, but it's not. In fact, it's constantly ripping off the power of people's labor. It's a completely insane system, but we're going to get a little bit more in depth into this, and I'm not going to read from the piece that I was sent last night. I want everybody to go and read that on their own. I'm going to go to another piece that I found from Mr. Cook, which gets into exactly how the monetary system is set up and some really good points on how maybe it should be run and how it has been run in the past, in our history. The Civil War is a really, really interesting time when it comes to currency, but we're going to get back to that at the bottom of the hour. But before that, we have Mr. Billy Shears coming up straight after this first break. Now, if you were listening to the program on Wednesday, you heard part one of this two-part piece on Mr. Brian Jones. And the first part was his early career. And now we're going to deal with his death. And this is a fascinating bit of rock and roll history. And just an amazing piece of work from Mr. Billy Shears. And you need to go out and check Billy Shears' blog, BillyShearsMusic.com, and he asked me to write a piece about Jeff Buckley this week, and so I was given the honor of actually writing his normal Thursday night special. So please go over there and check that out. And if you missed Hallelujah or you want to hear it in better audio quality than the stream, the track is available on the post. So stick around, folks. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, America's Liberal Voice. And when we come back, we will have part two with Mr. Billy Shears. Stick around. You won't want to miss this. We'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hello, kids. Surprise, surprise. I'll bet you're wondering why I'm popping up out of the blue. Something new is headed your way. It's the show that dares ask the question, just why in the hell are the straight evangelical Christians recruiting gay kids for their perverted lifestyle? The answer to this and more, coming in June. Hi, I'm Peter Godbold, and welcome to Strictly Confidential. The show premieres June the 18th at 9 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is Blake. Blake, Blake, Blake.
Brian Jones, founder of the Rolling Stones, was discovered dead in his pool late summer of 1969. Because of his two drug convictions, Scotland Yard classified his death as accidental or suicide. But after years of investigating by international biographer and music authority Jeffrey Giuliano, a more plausible explanation emerged. When presented with all the information, famous forensic pathologist and attorney Cyril Wick came to this conclusion.
I would recommend such a case being open. It's not a case that was investigated as a possible homicide. If this case happened in America, the homicide detectives in the district attorney's office would pursue it.
After Brian Jones was ostracized from the group he started, he withdrew and focused on renovating a newly purchased estate at Cotsford Farm. This is where, for Brian Jones, his time on Earth was beginning to slowly tick away. Exclusive interview Jeffrey Giuliano had with a person called Mr. X. Now, this is not the voice of the man who murdered Brian Jones. For security purposes, it was simply an interpretive actor's portrayal of the conversation. The interview took place in a London hotel room.
I was in Hartfield and I got talking to this bloke I knew, told me he was doing a bit of casual work for a builder who was doing work down at Brian Jones's house. And he says, drink what you like, you can take his dope, just take the piss out of him all day. I mean, we spent virtually all our time there, pissed up, wobbling about with buckets of cement.
I guess you better tell me about the night Brian Jones died.
Well, you say the night, but from the day, really. We were working there, and in the afternoon, me and my mate Frank, we got a bottle of vodka out of the house. Knocked that back, and then there's the beer, and this sort of, I don't know, party blew up. People started arriving, drinks going on. He'd treat you like shit sometimes, though. Then he comes by and says, how you doing? Oh, well, all right. You do a lot of swimming? That's when he started that, I can do 2 lengths of this pool underwater.
Okay, so when did things begin to turn ugly?
Basically, the way he got killed was it was me and Frank telling him about swimming underwater. Now, you got to bear in mind that we was well pissed, so you don't really know what you're doing. Oh, so you can swim underwater, can you, man? I said, you're good underwater, are you, Brian? Good underwater? Here, Wolf, try this. And I pushed him down from the top, from his shoulders, with my hands. Now, I'm bigger than him, and he was wiggling and panicking and jumping about. But, I mean, look, I'm a powerful bloke, so I held him down there till I thought, now let's see how good you are underwater. And I pulled him back up again. I mean, he was puffing and panting, and anyway, once he started slagging us off, then Frank got involved. I'll show you how to swim underwater. And then Frank pushes him down, you know. Like, he did try to get away, but we wouldn't let him go. Again, we was only having fun at the time.
So, anyway, this went on for, like, what, 10, 15 minutes. And there were maybe 7, 8, 9 dunking episodes. What was he doing, struggling the whole time?
Oh, he was trying to get away, you know. He was really trying. And then we went through the one period where it was, oh, come on, lads, come on, let us go. Come on, man, please. And he started pleading. Oh, come on, you know, come on, let me go, will you? I reckon it was accidental death. Because, I mean, we did not mean to kill him. All right, he died. So I suppose the court of law, a judge would say it was murder. But honest, look, I'm telling you, when it comes to the actual death, you read all the stories about the great climax building up and the death throes and the struggles, but it's nothing like that at all. I mean, he died just easier. When he died, it was so easy, we didn't know he was dead. Anyway, when we did actually realize that he was dead, Frank says, hey, look, he's dead. Let's get out of here.
Painted Black by the Rolling Stones seems to be the portrait of Brian Jones in his life and his tragic death.
Thing happening to you. Yes, I look hard enough into the setting sun. My love will last with me before the morning.
chief conspirator can now be identified. His name was Frank Thorogood, a shady London contractor with ties to the Stones office via their longtime driver and road manager, Tom Keelock. Initially, he did work at Keith Richards' home, Redlands, later moving on to Cotchford for an extended term as estate manager and Brian's personal minder.
Here's Brian's housekeeper, Mary Hallett, and her thoughts on Frank Thorogood.
You'd think he owned the house. He was the boss of the lot.
Was he? Did he feel he was Brian's boss, too?
Well, he used to give me that idea.
Did he order Brian around?
Quite a bit, yes.
Really? Well, what was Brian's reaction to that?
Well, he was very easygoing, wasn't he? Too easy. I think he was very, very nice and very kind. And he always made you feel, you know, at home. He was full of life. And so he said he thought that living on Earth was the hell. And he thought Earth was the hell. At times, I think he was very unhappy.
So his fame and money didn't really bring him any good things, did it?
Not really, no.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Wow. That was amazing. You've outdone yourself once again, Mr. Shears. Just absolutely amazing. And I don't think I've heard that much about that episode ever. I mean, hearing that guy saying, you know, well, it was so easy, you know, it was so easy to kill him. You know, and in the chat room, the question's being asked, you know, why was there no murder investigation? Well, you know, it was just another dead doper, you know. Wow. Unbelievable. And on the show post today, I usually, you know, with the track of the day, I'll put an Amazon link to whatever album that the track of the day comes from, but found a book that deals with this, which is available online. Brian Jones, Straight from the Heart, The Rolling Stones Murder. Might be something worthwhile to pick up. What do you reckon? But thank you so very, very much, Billy. Outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. And so you got to go to BillyShearsMusic.com. Check out musical poetry. It's a great website. You know, just great commentary from not only Mr. Shears, but those of us that work in liberal and progressive radio and other forms of media and whatnot. And it's just some amazing stuff. And please check out the little piece that I did on Jeff Buckley this week. I enjoyed doing that. I really did. Also on my show blog and also at 12thharmonic.net, there's an interesting little video that I would like you all to go check out. Not right now. You know, maybe later. While I came across and was stumbled to a web a video from that a guy did on what he considers a bulletproof argument about climate change, and it's a really, really interesting exercise that this guy does. And he's not arguing whether climate change is real or not, but he kind of sets up this exercise on he does a column and row exercise on whether climate change is true or false and whether we take action or not, and what the consequences of all possibilities are, and then how would you buy your lottery ticket. It's a really, really interesting exercise. It's about 9 or 10 minutes long, and if you like it, grab the embed code. If you have a blog, send it off, email it around, because I think that this is a really, really great little piece about that it doesn't matter whether or not it's definitive, What matters is what happens if we do anything about it or whether we don't. So please go and have a look either at The Horn on the Foxed Up blog or over at 12harmonic.net. So anyway, we're going to take our final break, oh, not our final break, our bottom of the hour break here on Foxed Up. And when we come back, I'm going to get into this really wonderful piece over at globalresearch.ca. Monetary reform and how a national monetary system should work. I know it's not very green, but I really think this is a crucial thing, and I hope it sparks your interest in doing a little bit of research on really what the Federal Reserve is. So stick around, folks. You're on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
This is The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any courses like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Once again, it's the judicial branch that's coming to rescue our Constitution, not the legislative branch. On Monday, a three-judge panel from the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that Bush can't detain someone indefinitely whenever he feels like it just by naming that person an enemy combatant. The judges said, the president cannot eliminate constitutional protections with the stroke of a pen by proclaiming a civilian, even a criminal civilian, an enemy combatant subject to indefinite military detention. If the president were allowed to do that, the judges said, it would alter the constitutional foundations of our government and have disastrous consequences. This ruling is a bracing reminder that Bush has already tried to alter the constitutional foundations, and Congress went along with him when it passed the Military Commissions Act, which granted Bush the very power that the judges ruled he did not have. The judges didn't flat out say that the Military Commissions Act is unconstitutional, which they should have. And rather than wait for the Supreme Court to weigh in on this, and who can trust that body now, we need to demand that Congress repeal the Military Commissions Act on the double. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
America's most dangerous investigative reporter, Greg Palast, joins Bob Kincaid for a bit of conversation radio.
But I have to tell you, this is such a pleasure to be able to actually lay it out.
Greg, anytime you want to lay it out, okay? We're reinventing things here. We call it conversation radio. We're very serious about that. And anytime you've got one of those that's a bit of a Gordian knot, bring it here, please, because there are people hungry for information and who are willing to, you know, this is not the Fox audience. We actually sit and think about stuff.
I like it. That's why I like this. It's the head-on radio network as opposed to the head-off television network that we've been suffering with. So I do appreciate your work, and let's set up another time. Take it easy, Bob.
Indeed. Take care, Greg. Thank you so much.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Got a pony dog craving for a fire.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
everybody. Welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And it's not that green a show, but however, the subject absolutely does affect the why. Well, not why, but it's one of the factors involved in those that control the system, and it definitely has an impact on why we don't make the changes that we need to make when it comes to the environment. And I know it feels like a stretch, but when you read more and more on this subject, the Federal Reserve and its monopoly on cash flow really controls everything. And, you know, it's like I can go head deep into this in so many ways. However, I'm going to go straight this piece that I found from the other piece. Like I said, check out richardccook.com. And there's links to these stories on the show post. And this post on monetary reform and how a national monetary system should work. And it says, the new report on monetary reform continues the dialogue by outlining the principles and mechanisms available to help guide the creation of monetary system for any nation that wishes to enjoy economic democracy and prosperity. This would be in contrast to the collapsing debt-based monetary system overseen by the Federal Reserve and the other central banks of the world. Coordinate at the top of such institutions as the International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank, and the Bank of International Settlements. Note that all the banks of the Western world are ultimately private institutions owned by the world's super rich. The international banking structure is operated by and on behalf of the world's monetary elite, primarily for their own profit. The author has realized as early as 1970 that the central problem with the world's economy lay on the side of distribution, not production. So it's not the workers' fault. It's the bankers' fault, okay? He came to Washington, D.C. that year and spent most of the next 36 years working within sight of the Washington Monument, learning how things really work. And for the first time, this report builds on the findings of many of the world's monetary reformers, past and present, by offering a complete prescription for a new and better world. The prescription is radically different from most progressive reform agendas that address only symptoms of the underlying systematic failures. And some of you might remember way back in the Fourth Estate radio days, I had an economist by the name of... Keane. I can't remember. His book was Wowzernomics, and he really takes current accepted economic theory to task and shows really kind of what how hollow it is, and that we're constantly chasing our tails. But I'm going to scan through this piece. It's rather lengthy, but I'm going to try and hit some of the most important parts. And he starts out where money comes from. It says, when setting out to study monetary principles, we must realize how little we know of the real facts of monetary history. Economics is an extremely limited discipline rife with untested assumptions and unchallengeable dogmas. Its most pernicious doctrine is the assertion that there is something called the market, where there is an invisible hand that makes everything work out the way it's supposed to. And in my opinion, the invisible hand is giving all the rest of us the finger, okay? Flipping us the bird, the New York high sign, whatever you want to call it. Actually, an economy functions according to the principles according to which it is designed and regulated. If it is designed to funnel wealth into the hands of the monetary controllers, then that is what the market and the invisible hand will do. If it is designed to foster the general welfare, as it should according to the preamble of the U.S. Constitution, then the market and the invisible hand will tend in that direction. Unfortunately, we march today to the tune of the monetary elite. So they are the ones who reap the profits and the benefits. They are the ones on whom the invisible hand lavishes the wealth of the world. It is done through a process of bank-created credit, While during the 19th century, other forms of money circulated, such as large quantities of coinage, silver certificates, and government-issued greenbacks. Almost all the money that exists today originates through a loan by financial institution to an individual or business. When a loan is made, it is issued as a liability on the bank's ledger. When it is repaid, the liability is canceled. With today's computer systems, all transactions are digitized, of course. The bank keeps the interest on the loan, and it is combined administrative fee and profit. The money that it is lent had no prior existence. Okay, this is one of the key things. It comes out of thin air. Once money is created as credit, it takes many forms according to how the loan recipient spends it. Some credit is used by businesses or individuals as investment in order to generate profits over and above the amount they must repay to the bank with interest. If the money is used simply for consumer purchases, the individual consumer must pay back the loan through future earnings. In those cases where the borrower defaults on the loan or goes bankrupt, the money simply remains in circulation however it was spent. Unfortunately, large amounts of credit are used mainly for speculation, not for any benefit to the producing economy. It includes securities bought on margin and borrowed by hedge funds where the fund selling its assets then pay back their bank loans before unloading the business on someone else. Now, this is where all this all these groups that get together just to buy stuff, buy companies. This is this really bad tending towards these super mergers that are going on. And basically all this credit is basically just poker chips in the world's casino. And so the money is not working for the people. And he mentions greenbacks. And this is a huge point. President Lincoln funded his side of the Civil War by printing United States government-backed, silver-backed greenbacks, okay? This is a crucial point. Some people speculate, and I think it's more than speculation. I think that this is really getting at the heart of the real history. The United States at the time of the Civil War was becoming way too powerful for the then English central banks, okay, the Bank of England. Now, they started funding the South's war effort because they wanted to divide the Union. Now, as you remember, Abe Lincoln never said anything about slavery. That was a side benefit, abolishing slavery. But it was all about retaining the Union. You know, you've heard this. It was all about maintaining the Union of the United States. So, because the bankers weren't going to fund his end of the war, he started printing greenbacks backed by the security of the United States government. So, why should a private monopoly be able to print money through a thing called fractional reserve lending, which is another really bizarre concept? If they can do it, why can't the government do it? Okay? And why do we have to take loans? Why do we have to take loans from a private bank in which to run our government when we are guaranteeing the security of the private bank's loans? And I'll let you ponder that while we take a break. I know that this is heavy stuff, and I'm not even going to be able to scratch the surface. We might come back to this next week, because these pieces have really got me back on a bugaboo of mine. And these are the reasons why most wars have been started. You got to understand this. Most wars have been because of monetary issues, and the banks end up funding both sides, and they just continue to win, and we all die and get screwed. So stick around, folks. You're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Fed and other evils of the world, and we'll be right back after this.
and life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com, your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Brought to you by the Republican National Committee. George W. Bush, Maximum Decider.
We keep the evildoers down at Gitmo because they're dangerous. Terrorists learn better when they got panties on their heads and stripes on their backs like the grill marks on a ribeye. If we don't do that, they'll kill you. Because they hate your mama, and they hate your Bible like they hate your friends. Fear. It's what's for dinner.
Polar bears live in the Arctic, on the ice.
But the ice is melting because of global warming.
Some polar bears have to swim so far they drown. Baby bears have died.
When I'm old, when I'm 45, all the bears could be gone.
Grown-ups should do something.
If you're a grown-up, go to polarbearsos.org now. You can make sure polar bears are protected under the Endangered Species Act.
Please help them.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Shake your money maker. Shake your money maker.
Nice one, Bob. Nice one. Welcome back, everybody. Okay, I need to make a little correction, okay? The banks weren't back in the South. Bob's pulled me up on something, and he's very right to do so. The Confederates were also printing their own money as well, and this was a huge issue for the international bankers, because they weren't making any money off the United States, okay? They weren't getting their cut, right? And for those of you, the faithful out there, you know, when Jesus supposedly turned the tables over, you know, in the Grand Market Square, it wasn't the hookers and all that he was angry about. He was angry at the money changers. That's where he was pissed off. Okay, a little further down in this piece, going straight back to where we were, because we don't have all that much time left. So by what right do the bankers bind the economy in such a straitjacket of debt? Again, the underlying logic is that money is a commodity. A group of men have money. It is their money, we believe, rightfully earned. Therefore, because these individuals have money, they have a further right to lend it to others. But under existing laws, the banking system then makes the leap of assuming that because they have money which can be lent, they have a right to lend much more money than they actually possess. Somehow, they have become fit practitioners of the fractional reserve banking system, whereby, as described above, you can lend simply by creating debts in their computers based on some ratio between their capital stock and their lending ceiling. But if bankers can do this, why can't you or I? If I have $1,000, why can't I then lend $10,000 and collect the corresponding interest? The answer is that a bank has a government charter and supposedly can guarantee through various safeguards that people to whom it lends can repay. Then even if it isn't required of a bank anymore, if it can package its loans and sell them to some other business entity, such as an investment company. Okay? Now, and the investment companies are using this to play Russian roulette. Well, not Russian roulette, but, you know, play gambling games on this stock market-based economy. And it's constantly because of this ever-devaluing dollar and inflation that our labor constantly gets devalued. Costs of things go up. It's insane. And he says, it says, by the fact that banks can only be created by people who are already rich, can put up some capital, build a functioning business, and obtain the government charter mentioned above, once they do this, they are masters of the world. Also note that under today's highly unstable financial conditions, it is not only banks which create credit through lending. Since the deregulation of the 1980s, thank you, Reagan, Wall Street brokerage firms greatly expanded the system whereby speculative loans are floated for purchases of securities. This has resulted in a current ratio of debt to equity, get this, of 22 to 1 in the U.S. securities market, where debt far outweighs value. So for all that, you know, all these numbers that you see on the news every night, of all the numbers that you see, 22 to 1, the one being the actual value. Okay, he goes further into what is credit and some other things, and you really need to go and read all three pieces that are involved here. It's worth about an hour of your time. But he gets into the prescription, because he talks about credit and how, you know, the only reason that this sustainable growth thing continues to go, which it's unsustainable, I mean, it's a fallacy in and of itself, is because we're running on borrowed money all the time. And now personal debt has just gone absolutely through the roof. He says, debt also financed much of the trade deficit by borrowing to purchase what was imported from abroad. The need to borrow has been greatly increased by the decline of the U.S. manufacturing sector, where well-paying jobs that contributed to the national income have disappeared or have been outsourced overseas. I've been going off about this, selling all our real jobs off to China for ages. The ratio of debt to national income has reached historic proportions, 460% of the national income today versus 186% in 1957. So over 4.5 times our actual gross domestic product we maintain in credit, in debt. We cannot maintain this kind of insanity. And he says the prescription for this is, as with anyone facing bankruptcy, it is time for those who wish to understand the current U.S. economic crisis to take a deep breath, step back, and gather themselves in order to correctly assess the situation. Obviously, the solution is not to risk blowing up the world by continuing to resolve our domestic economic problems through overseas conquests. This is what the Western nations have been trying to do for centuries, and it appears that the rest of the world may finally have had enough. This is especially the case today, when the main factor that is floating the U.S. economy is the huge U.S. trade imbalance, where foreign nations must use the dollars they take in to their ultimate disadvantage by financing a federal budget deficit that is measured in dollars whose value is dropping. Okay, and you've been hearing stuff about China getting ready to just dump the U.S. dollar. And when they do this, we're screwed. And we're going to see something that makes the Great Depression look like a walk in the park. Because we've been convinced that the system that we're running right now is the only thing that's out there, and this is the way it's got to be done, and that the invisible hand will provide and guide. Well, the invisible hand is flipping us the bird and smacking us in the back of the head. And like Brian Jones, it's drowning us in the pool. And he says, the solution lies with the federal government taking back its constitutional authority, constitutional authorized control of credit of the nation from the financiers and managing as previously stated as a public utility. There is no need to eliminate capitalism, change the basis of property ownership, abolish corporations, etc., because the organization and administration of the production process is essentially irrelevant to the real problem. Once again, the producing economy is not the problem. It has performed with tremendous effectiveness in creating the goods and services people need and want. It would be the basis for real economic democracy if its bounty could be made available and distributed in accordance with democratic principles. And our current economic policy and the way that money is handled is not democratic. It's only for the elite. And it only serves them. It's not serving us. And he gets further into this, and I might come back to this on Monday, because I there's some concepts in here that I haven't even gotten to yet that I think speak volumes into how we could stop being at war every time we run into monetary problems. And one of the things that he says in the other piece is that when the fall comes, it ends up being a big selling and buying frenzy. And those with money get to retain their money because they get to buy things cheaply. And who's going to be one of the biggest winners? The Carlyle Group. The Carlyle Group. You know, there's sometimes when those New World Order ranters have a point. So anyway, folks, we're going to wrap it up for this Friday. And just a programming note, Mr. Bob Kincaid is going to be in replay tonight because he needs to go and see his son's debut football game tonight. And I think that's fantastic. There's family values for you. all right, folks. Thank you so much to Billy Shears. What a wonderful two-parter this week. And go to BillyShearsMusic.com. Thank you to Bob Kincaid for producing and announcing the program. Kick ass, mate. It's been a really good week this week. Thank you to our mods and our bloggers and everyone who helps out to make this family of ours run. Thank you to Scott Berry at B1 Ladder Productions for the music. Thank you to the Carpenters for everything that they did to help us get up and running. And don't forget, Strictly Confidential debuts Monday night. And we swap slots, me and Joe. All this stuff happening, it's just crazy. So as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green, and we will see you Monday.
I would tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes. Eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be, as yours are.
An emergency government has been put in place in the Gaza Strip. Hamas has taken full control of the volatile area, and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has put Salim Fayyad in charge. Hamas has also captured and is holding several senior Fatah officials, but has declared amnesty for Fatah members and is releasing many of them. Full-scale looting is taking place in Gaza City. Israel has sealed off its border crossings into the region. In Iraq, 5 more U.S. soldiers have been killed since Wednesday, 4 of them in combat. The death of the 5th is under investigation. In Afghanistan, suicide bombers struck 2 military convoys today. A NATO soldier was killed. 3 children running alongside a Humvee were killed. One of the most dangerous and ambitious terrorist cells ever to operate in England has been sentenced to a collective 136 years behind bars. London prosecutors said the Al-Qaeda-linked group had precise plans to kill thousands of people in America and England. The seven-man case, the New York Stock Exchange, Citigroup, the IMF, the World Bank, and three Prudential high-rises prior to 9/11. After 9/11, they coordinated nefarious attacks on London that included the detonation of a radioactive bomb. The attacks were thwarted by British police in Operation Rhyme. In New Jersey, six men accused of plotting to kill troops at Fort Dix have pleaded not guilty. The federal judge in the case promised a speedy trial scheduled for October. In southeast Turkey, five people were wounded today when a bomb exploded near a bus stop. The explosion is one of a series of attacks widely blamed on separatist Kurds. Tehran has begun expelling some of the 1.5 million Afghani immigrants that have crossed the border into Iran in recent months. As many as 100,000 refugees have been deported. Reputed KKK member James Ford Seal was convicted by a federal court yesterday for conspiracy and kidnapping in the deaths of two black 19-year-olds in Mississippi in 1964. Prosecutors said that they had to, quote, make a deal with the devil, end quote, to get Seal's testimony. Now 71, he faces the rest of his life in prison. Ruth Graham, wife of the